Welcome back into The Drive on 96.5 The Fan. Coming up in about 15 minutes, we are going to be joined by Bob Nightingale. He does fantastic work with USA Today. So this has been my theme for the course of the show today. You guys remember that scene in Rocky 3 where Rocky was a little bit down, you know? He got beat up by Clubber Lang. Mick had died. He had really lost his way. He was in L.A. and he was working out, but you know what? It just wasn't really connecting. He was on the beach. He wasn't running hard. Adrian tried yelling at him. Something was wrong with Rocky. He was a little bit off. He was scared. He was scared of greatness. And eventually, Apollo Creed had to talk to him because he was whooping him up in a sparring session.
Damn, Rock, come on! What's the matter with you?
Tomorrow. Let's do it tomorrow.
There is no tomorrow! There is no tomorrow! There is no tomorrow!
This is my question, and I'm curious to get you guys' thoughts on this. 913-586-7965. This is an attendance conversation without having an attendance conversation. I think that you guys would agree that the Royals need some kind of boost over these next couple of games. The Royals only have 3 home games remaining. It's a weekend. Chiefs are out of town. K-State's out of town. KU's out of town. There should be people at the game this weekend. They did really well this week. They averaged around 18,000 people for their 3 weekday games. So this isn't even a, hey, I don't think you guys are showing up. Rob, do you think that Kansas City is prepared to sort of rally around the Royals? Because we have seen that the environment in certain places can be the difference in whether you win or lose. You cheer for one of those kind of teams. You have seen KU in some bad spots, but you know what? They figure it out because they're at home. That crowd gets going. That crowd gets loud. You have seen the effect that it has on the opposing team. We've seen it at Arrowhead at times. Big third down, crowd makes some noise. Crowd affects the game and is the 12th man for the defense. Do you think that the Royals are capable? Do you think it's possible for them to get that kind of boost this weekend? Because the Royals need something. Whether it's somebody in the rotation, whether it's a great game from Bobby Witt Jr., whether it is they need a couple of bats to wake up, whether it is they got 30,000 people and Salvi gets a big hit and it's a Salvi splash and everybody can take a deep breath and relax a little bit, it feels like the Royals need something. Do you think they'll get it from the crowd?
So my knee jerk is to say no. But last time we had one of these conversations where we said, hey, can the crowd rally around this Royals team? I believe it was in July. They had a 4-game set at home against the Cleveland Guardians. And we were talking about how attendance wasn't great that week, and they have a weekend series, and it's Cleveland. The first place could be on the line. Is Kansas City going to buy in? And I remember we, at the end of that series, thought, wow, the Royals fan base deserves a lot of credit. They averaged like 28 a night for a 4-game series against the Guardians. So they have done this once. They have rallied around this team once when they felt like something special was on the brink of happening. Back then it was, can they catch first place? I think Royals fans know that if they win this series or even sweep this series, it's a lock. Postseason baseball is happening in Kansas City. Maybe not literally in Kansas City, but happening for the Royals. But it seems like, and maybe I'm just listening to the text line, and maybe it's social media, and maybe real life is outside those two spheres. But it feels like Royals fans have been all season itching for a reason to be right about why they doubt this team. And I don't know that now that real doubt has crept in for real reasons, if they're going to go out there and support. Because I was at the Twin Series, I guess that's 2 weeks ago now. It was the weekend after the Chiefs opener. And they didn't do great on Friday, and they didn't do great on Saturday, and they did okay on Sunday. That was a series where they swept the Twins out of town, and the Chiefs had already played, and KU was on the road, and Mizzou, I believe, was at that point. I don't remember who Mizzou was playing at that point, but it felt like a K-State was on the road. It felt like, oh, this is, the crowd's going to show up, and they didn't. So I'd love for the fan base to rally around this team. I'd love to hear about 28, 29, 30 a night out there, but I think we're going to hear stories about the weather and, you know, it's going to get chilly and, you know, why would I believe in this tea? I think that's what the text line is going to get filled with. So I don't think you're going to see the rally, but I hope we do.
I am on the opposite side of this than you are. The Royals have never had a regular season series like the one that they have this weekend. They didn't have this in 2015. They were just good the entire season. I would argue that they didn't have one even in 2014. Their final homestand, they were holding on to try to make sure that they made it. No, the September in 2014 was a fairy tale. And then you woke up and like, wait, hold on, they're making the postseason? Royals fans have never seen their team in a fight. That's what this is. This is a fight. This is a week 16. You need to beat this team to make the postseason. This is one of the most important regular season games that the Royals this weekend, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. These are some of the most important regular season baseball games that Kauffman Stadium has held in the last 25 years. So I'm not thinking there's going to be 16,000 people out there. I think the crowd is going to be there. My question to you more than anything is, and is the crowd going to make a difference? Maybe this is something that only the players can fix. You can't go out there and pitch for them. You can't go out there and hit. But man, the Royals need a spark. And that spark can either come from the crowd. That spark can come from Bobby Witt having a big hit. That spark can come from Salvador Perez. They need something. The Royals are limping to the finish line. Now, you could still win limping to the finish line, but in 2014, they finished strong. In 2015, they limped to the finish line, but they had such a lead over everybody else that it was, hey, that team got kind of bored, and now they got ready. You want to talk about nervous in a playoff-like atmosphere? Isn't that what it should be on Friday? I know it's not a playoff game. Some of you maybe couldn't afford to go to a playoff game. Man, Friday's going to feel like a playoff game. If they win, whew, they needed that. We're one step closer. Man, with every game the Royals lose, the fan base becomes more and more nervous. The only thing that has not pushed Royals fans off the edge is you're still winning the game. Sure, you might have been up 12 and now you're only up 4. Man, you're still winning the game. If the game ended, you would still be ahead of the other team. That could possibly not be the case at the end of the weekend. If this team loses this series and Detroit sweeps their series, hey, you are at square. They have the same record that you do. And in that case, the Tigers are outplaying the Royals for the final week of the season. They've outplayed the Royals for the final 5 weeks of the season. Why would they not outplay them for just 6 more games down the stretch? So these games, these 3 games that the Royals have this weekend, they are playoff games. They need good crowd. They need good attendance. They need good energy. They need to win these games. Because if you lose this series and then you got to go on the road and you're counting on the Chicago White Sox to do you a solid, you're counting on those kind of teams to do you a favor, you talk about the fan base, right? The fan base right now feels like they are at an 8 in terms of nervousness. You lose this series to the Giants this weekend, you go from an 8 to a 10 on a scale of nervousness.
I'll say this to your point. And I forget what game it was, but it was Bobby Witt and all. They were talking to the media after the game, and they said that was the loudest that group, this core, had ever heard Kauffman. And I remember, I forget the game. It was later in the season, but they were raving about it. They were talking about, like, there was this energy in the building, and it was great. I think if the crowd shows up, they can absolutely make a difference in the game. I believe that. We've heard it from the players. Hey, when the big crowds show up, we feel an extra jolt of enthusiasm, an extra adrenaline rush. Like, maybe it gets them back feeling a little right. My question becomes, and I know we don't have an attendance conversation, is the crowd going to show up? I think if the crowds show up, they will have the impact. But that's an if the crowds show up. And like I said, I was at that Friday night game. It was the Friday after the Chiefs had beaten the Ravens in week one, and it was Royals and Twins. You can really put the Twins in your rearview mirror. The playoffs are 4 weeks away. All right, Kansas City, let's show up to the K. And there were 18,000 out there that night. And the 18,000, they got loud in moments. They do what crowds do. But it was not a playoff type of, hey, we're in the home stretch feeling. And I worry the Giants game is going to be the same. I hope I'm wrong. If it's big crowds, the big crowds will provide a jolt. But I just don't know the big crowds are coming because this Tiger series, the Wednesday, the hey, it's make or break time, had 16-2 out there. That's ugh.
Text line 913-586-7965. C-Dot, every time you said this is their most important series, the Royals have lost. The Royals have failed to capitalize on their moments in the season and gain traction with the fan base. This is where I'll push back a little bit. Maybe it's just you guys forgot what it was like to cheer for an 8-8 football team, just an okay football team. I feel like people wanted the Royals to be an 86-87 win team and have no clue of what an 86 win team looks like. You know what it looks like? The Royals. A team that is good in a lot of spots, but very clearly flawed. That's what you have. I know you KU fans don't know it. This is what a 9 seed would look like in the NCAA tournament. This is what a 10 seed would look like in the NCAA tournament. That's what the Royals are. This team is not winning the postseason. This team is not making the World Series. But do they have enough to hold on and make the NCAA tournament? Can you not get beat in round one of the Big 12 tournament? And can you guarantee that you have a spot in the dance? That's where we are. They're an 85-win team. Even the next week and a half, it's going to be rocky. It just, all season has been rocky with the Royals. They get hot. They build themselves up on beating the White Sox, and then they lose. They lose 7 in a row, then they sweep the Minnesota Twins. Like you guys always say, enjoy the ride and the roller coaster. You win it now. This is the roller coaster. The roller coaster has dips. It has turns. It has ups and downs. The Royals need to win 5 of their next 9 games. If they win 5 of their next 9 games, they're going to the postseason. It's really that simple. It does not matter what they have done before today. You got an off day right now. If they win 5 of their next 9, it does not matter what the other teams do. You would need the Tigers to go 8-1 in order to beat you. Tigers ain't going 8-1. You would need Minnesota to go 8-1 down the stretch. Can you win 5 of your next 9? Your next 6 games are against teams that have a losing record. This is obtainable if you're the Royals. At some point, you just got to start scoring more runs than the other team. Coming up on the other side, we'll be joined by Bob Nightingale of USA Today. We'll get his thoughts. So the Royals going to hold him off. Keep it right here. It's The Drive.
The Drive with Carrington Harrison on your home for Kansas City sports. 96.5 The Fan, brought to you by DM Injury Law. Have you or a loved one been in a car wreck? Contact DM Injury Law today and get the money you deserve. Car wreck? Remember, Mike's got this.
Let's go to the phone lines right now to be joined by Bob Nightingale. He covers baseball for USA Today. We'll get his thoughts. Is he worried about the Royals as they are 2 games up with 9 to go? Bob, appreciate your time. Thanks a lot for hopping on today.
Sure, my pleasure. Thank you.
Absolutely. I guess we'll just start with the question everybody is asking right now. Where are you at on the Royals on a scale from 1 to 10? How worried are you about the Royals? This playoff thing seemed like a foregone conclusion a couple of weeks ago. The Royals were playing better after the injury to Vinny Pasquantino, and things have really fallen apart in the last week or so.
Yeah, not playing good ball at all. I mean, no, they're running, you know, against a hot team in Detroit, but still, you shouldn't get swept by the Tigers. I'm like a 2 or 3. I still think they make it. And the reason I say that is because the Twins are completely falling apart. We'll see how long. Detroit's very hot. We'll see how long that lasts, too. But no, I still think, if the Royals make it, I don't think they'll host a wild card game. But I think that, they get in there for sure.
Yeah, I think what has really frustrated fans is, I mean, Baltimore has left the door wide open. If the Royals have been playing just fine these last couple of weeks, they could be the team that's hosting it. And now as you look, every time you click refresh, Minnesota is catching up. But you're right, they lost earlier today to Cleveland. You then look at the Tigers. They might be the hottest team in baseball right now. The two teams that they're in the biggest fight with, they're teams that are right in your division.
Yeah, I mean, the Twins are falling apart. I mean, this is one of the epic collapses. It reminds you of when the Red Sox, the chicken beer thing, they fell apart to Tampa in 2007. No one saw this coming, and they can't buy a win. I mean, they're on those games against Cleveland, and I think they lost 3 of the 4 games by 1 run. So And, you know, now they're on the road to Boston. You know, Boston's suddenly alive, and they're a below 500 team. So, yeah, they could have taken advantage of the Orioles thing. So, you know, now you go on the road. But you know what? That's what happened last year with the Texas Rangers. Lost the division last day of the season. Went to Tampa, swept. Went to Baltimore, swept. So, you know, next thing you know, they'll win the World Series. So I think KC will be fine. They'll get in, you know, largely because the, you know, with the Twins collapse. And we'll see what happens. The Tiger is not at pressure builds. I mean, if they were that good, you know, the front office wouldn't have given up on them. I mean, they traded Jack Flaherty and Mark Canha, a couple relievers, and here they are. I mean, nobody saw this coming, not even the Tigers.
Yeah, I was just going to ask you, how have the Tigers been able to turn things around? Because you're right. I mean, that wasn't a team that I was worried about. But just, you know, a month ago, I'm looking at the standings and I'm like, oh, they're only 5.5 games back. They still got 6 games against the Royals. You know, maybe it's possible. And then, I mean, this week, all the Royals needed to do was win one of these games against the Tigers. And I think it would have calmed a lot of fears with the fan base. The Royals get swept in that series at home. And now it's created a little bit of a pressurized situation.
Yeah, I mean, you still expect him to, you know, I think when Detroit came to KC, the thing was, okay, the Tigers are done. You know, they're going to lose 2 out of 3 and not get swept by the Royals. So you didn't see that coming. You didn't see their, you know, offense, you know, just kind of disappearing. So I still think the Royals are, I mean, yeah, Royals be fine. You know, Boston doesn't have enough. We'll see what's happened to Detroit. But, you know, with the way Minnesota's played, it's really, opened the door, almost a freebie for the Royals where you can scuffle right now. It's not going to make any difference.
Bob, looking ahead just a little bit, how would you kind of handicap a series between the Royals and the Orioles?
Well, I think every team from the Central, you know, is probably going to be an underdog. So Cleveland's got that, you know, great bullpen, especially with Class A. You never know what can happen. But I think, you know, unless the Orioles tailspin continues all the way through September, you got to think they're an underdog. Because you still got Corbin Burns going to game 1, Zach Eflin going game 2, and that's all it takes. So, I mean, obviously the Royals guys have pitched, you know, well, too, with rotation. We'll see. But I think particularly going to Baltimore, you know, that Baltimore would have to be the favorite, at least a slight favorite.
Right now, we're talking to Bob Nightingale just for a couple of more minutes here. Bob, I guess tell us a little bit more about the Giants. Not really a team that the Royals get a chance to see a whole lot, them being in the National League. What kind of team are the Giants? I know this season hasn't really been up to their standards. They're a little bit under 500, but they're coming to Kansas City to play the final homestand of the year.
Yeah, I mean, Giants are an underachieving team. I mean, that's why the GM there, Farhan Zaidi, is in trouble. A lot of people think he'll get fired. Bob Melvin blames himself. But, yeah, they're just underachieved all year. Offense is very erratic. The pitching outside of Blake Snell has been erratic. Logan Webb has done well for him. You know, Snell's been pitching out of his mind. So, you know, I like the Royals, so, you know, to play well against the Giants. The Royals are certainly a better team than the Giants.
That is Bob Nightingale joining us on the show today. He does fantastic work for USA Today. Bob Nightingale is not a man that's worried about the Royals making the postseason. Bob, we appreciate your time. Thanks a lot for hopping on today. Bob Nightingale just didn't want to say bye to me, Rob. Just didn't want to. Me and Bob Nightingale got beef, Rob.
That was an odd finish.
He just didn't want to. He just didn't want to say bye. Maybe his phone cut out. It's like, wait, hold on. I'm expecting to give me something back here. I told you bye. You should say bye to me. He just hung up the phone. Text Bob. Make sure everything's good. I don't know why me and Bob Nightingale would have beef like that. Kind of hurt my feelings that Bob Nightingale didn't want to say bye to me. You're listening to The Drive on 96.5 The Fan, 913-586-7965. We will continue to read your text here about the Royals. You guys are understandably very, very nervous about the Kansas City Royals, which I get it. I'm on your side here. This week was disappointing. This is the most disappointing week that they've had. And they had a week in which they lost their arguably second most important offensive player. All they had to do was win one of these games. If they have one win this week against the Tigers, I don't even think we're talking about the Royals today. They're up 4 with 9 to go. It's go time. The fact that they lost and they are two up with nine to go, and the fact that the Tigers have the White Sox on the schedule, I think that makes it a thing. If the Royals now don't win or have at least a winning record in their last nine games, I think it leaves them vulnerable to be passed up here. The Tigers are playing their best baseball right now. We'll see if the Tigers have enough to finish this thing out. They have closed a pretty decent size gap in a short period of time. You have to play three games better than the Royals in these last nine games, but you've been three games better than the Royals for the last 3 weeks. If you win your series and the Royals lose their series, which is certainly possible given how the Royals have played, we're talking about that the Royals are up one with six to go. That is absolutely manageable at this point. So the only thing that can really end this conversation is the Royals just got to start winning games. There's really no other conversation. There's no other. This is a very simple cause and effect. Win more.
I will say this, and it's a point he made, and it's understandable why we've been focused on, you know, the Tigers and the Guardians for a while and then the Astros. Boy, the Twins are in full meltdown mode.
They are.
The Twins are, like, if you are a Royals fan listening right now, you're thinking, man, the Royals are not playing great baseball. This is very nerve-wracking to come down the stretch and be like, oh, man. The Twins are playing light years worse than you are. They just lost today. I saw it earlier on coming across my timeline. They lost on a walk-off on the road at Cleveland, and now they are now tied for the third wild card spot with the Tigers. So, yes, we keep an eye on the Tigers. They are red hot. Yes, the Royals are not playing their best ball down the stretch. Those two things are absolutely true, and I understand the fear. But maybe, just maybe, when you scoreboard watch starting tomorrow with the Royals and Saturday if you're bouncing around channels and, you know, checking your phone, keep an eye on the Twins, because the Twins now head on the road to Fenway. And I know that the Red Sox are not a viable playoff team anymore, and at the beginning of August they were in the race, and now in the middle of September they're out of the race. But the way the Twins are playing has to give you an iota of confidence in the Royals that, hey, it could always be worse. Maybe we don't, you know, roar to life, but that team is playing so much worse.
Yeah, I think at least for the Royals, what I think gives you kind of, you should exhale. I agree. Someone on the text line says him having a 2 on a scale of concern is nuts. I think the number should be higher than that. I don't know if it should be a 8 or a 9 with the Royals. And I think that because the Royals have the failsafe of the third wild card spot. If it was three seasons ago and you didn't have that extra wild card, yeah, I'd be panicked. I actually think the Royals would then be the underdogs based on how they've played these last couple of weeks if you didn't. But the fact that, I mean, right now there are three teams for two spots. That's how we've narrowed this thing down. All three of those teams are in your division. There's only three teams that can grab those wild card spots. It's the Royals, Twins, and the Tigers. Can you be better than at least one of those teams over the next 10 days? That's it. You don't have to be better than both of them. You have to be better than one of those teams. That's where I think the "they're going to be fine" stems from. It's not three teams fighting for one spot. In that scenario, you might say the Tigers are the favorite just given how they've played and how the other two teams have played. But the fact that the Royals, even if they get passed by the Tigers, all right, you just got to finish better than Detroit or Minnesota, not Detroit and Minnesota. I think that's where they're going to be all right.
And listen, I agree with the texter, and I disagree with Bob Nightingale that I think two is low. But for what it's worth, this show has been using FanGraphs and their playoff odds as ours all season long. If you don't believe in FanGraphs and you use Baseball Reference, I don't care. We've been using FanGraphs. FanGraphs, as of right now, has the Royals at a 90% chance to make the playoffs. So if you are Bob Nightingale and the math is telling you...
The math is certainly on the Royals side.
The math is certainly on the Royals side. It is a 90% chance, according to people who do this for a living, the Royals are going to make the postseason. Meanwhile, the Twins are at 62% and the Tigers are at 47%. So I think two might be a little bit too low, but I think Royals fans are getting a little bit prisoner of the moment and they're kind of viewing baseball the way we view football. Oh man, they just lost yesterday. They're in big, big trouble. I think anything over a 4 is a little dramatic because of that 90% number.
I actually don't think that's a fair thing to say. I mean,
really?
If you've lost 15 of your last 22 games, I don't think that the team has played well enough to give you confidence, where I hear what the numbers tell you. But this is also Kansas City. If there's any city that has defied win probability, isn't it Kansas City? You've done that on the baseball side and the football side. If you really believe in win probability, Patrick Mahomes should have one Super Bowl ring. Like, if you are a true believer in it. So I could understand how you have been watching Kansas City sports over the last 10 years. You are looking at win probability and you say, I don't believe it. It's not real. I've seen my teams defy this time and time again. So I know what the little computer box tells me. I am following what my eyes and what my instincts tell me. And if you have lost 15 of your last 22 baseball games, you can't say that anything is a certainty at the end of the season. Anything is possible. They could very easily get swept this weekend by the Giants. Just based on how they play. They just had a 7-game losing streak 2 weeks ago. They could absolutely get swept this weekend by the Giants. That's where I think it comes from.
That's fair. But to be the math person again, this is not a number that's like, oh, wow, let's gloat. In September, which is, 19 days into September, and include that bad stretch you mentioned, they're 7-9. So they're under 500, but they're doing exactly what we thought they'd do. They're treading water. And if they had won a singular game against the Tigers, then they'd be 500 in September, which, again, is not let's throw a parade and shoot fireworks that you're 7-9 in September. That's not woohoo worthy. But with 9 games to go, if you've been 7-9 over your last 16, you feel like you can be 4-5, maybe 5-4 over your next 9. And that gets you to what? 12-16, 12-13 for the month. And that's good enough to just do exactly what we're asking them to do. Tread water and get into the dance.
Let's get back to talking about football. We've been talking a lot of baseball this hour. We're going to bounce back and forth and talk some baseball with you guys. All right, so this is what I want to get your opinion on. So I've been scouring the little gambling apps, and I was very interested to see what the running total was going to be for Carson Steele. So the running total was down for the Chiefs, didn't know who the starter was going to be, but they have now put it back up. They have the over-under for Carson Steele at 42.5 for Sunday Night Football. You and I are on opposite sides of the argument. I actually think that that number is a little bit too low. This is why. I looked it up. In week 2, there were 35 players that had at least 10 rush attempts. So that includes quarterbacks, right? Like Jalen Hurts, all those guys. There were 35 players that got at least 10 rush attempts. 28 of those players would have hit the over on 42.5. So my question more than anything is not really the yardage. It's what do you think the volume looks like for Carson Steele on Sunday? If he gets 13 carries, he's getting 42 yards. He's a good enough back. Their offensive line is good enough. He is going to get 42 yards rushing if they give him 13 or 14 carries in the game. So my question is, how much do you think they are going to use him? And you and I are very different. I don't think Samaje Perine is getting 8 carries. I'm not sure if Kareem Hunt is going to play. I think we'll get that answer tomorrow whenever Andy Reid meets with the media on whether or not that we're going to see him start or play in this game. I think that Carson Steele should be treated like running back one. I'm not saying he's on the high end of running back one, but your starting running back gets 45 yards rushing. I think that number is a little bit too low and probably should be closer to about 52.5 than where it is. I plan on taking the over. To me, he gets 11 carries and has over 42 yards. I think the number's a little bit too low, and I don't want to say disrespectful. He hasn't proven anything in this league, but I think that Vegas is telling you that it's going to be a little bit more running back by committee than I think it's actually going to be on Sunday.
Me and Vegas are in lockstep here. And historically speaking, being in lockstep with Vegas is a good spot to be. What's that saying? They don't build those casinos with losses. They don't have all those expensive chandeliers because they keep losing. I think it's by committee on Sunday. Now, I don't know if that's Keontae Ingram or, Kareem Hunt, but I think you're going to see a healthy mix of Perine, a healthy mix of Steele, and a healthy mix of whoever ends up being running back three. Right now, it's looking like Ingram because they put him on the active roster. Yeah. I think it is going to be a committee on Sunday. I just don't think they're going to go from you were undrafted, hey, it was a nice story, you made the roster, congratulations, to you're getting 15, 16 carries and the bulk of the weight in a regular season game. Not yet, at least. I'd come around to you maybe by the Saints game. Hey, he's had some time in the league. It's game 5. It's go time. I think they're going to be a little bit more committee-like on Sunday. And Maybe I'm going to end up wrong, but me and Vegas are on the same side, and that's a good side to historically be on. I think it's going to be kind of get in where you fit in, and you're going to see P. Ryan get a couple of carries. And I think you love your snap counts. When we look at the snap counts on Monday, it's going to be P. Ryan got a healthy dose, Ingram got a handful, Steele got a healthy dose, but it's going to come out looking relatively even between the three.
Okay, so to give you, so they have, so that's the number. The number for the game, the over-under for Carson Steele is at 42.5. They have him at his over-under on rush attempts at 11.5. If he gets 13 carries, you get 40 yards in this game. That's where, to me, I think that Vegas is just a little bit off on this. It's new. There's not really a data point yet for him where Vegas knows you can take advantage of Vegas maybe week one, week two of something. By week three, they have fully closed up and you can't exploit that hole anymore. If you think that Carson Steele is going to hit the over on carries, you also have to take the over on rush yards. That's just where it is. 11.5 to me feels about right. The Chiefs run the ball, I've always said, the Chiefs run the ball way more than people give them credit. I understand that people want them to run the ball more. Their run-pass splits are exactly what you think it should be. The Chiefs throw the ball about 60% of the time. They run it the other 40. They give Isaiah Pacheco enough touches. It's not 2005 where they're giving Isaiah Pacheco 300 touches. He gets 200 rushes, and now you give those carries to Carson Steele. So if I had to like give my prediction on what Carson Steele does, I think it's like a 12, 13 carry day for around 55 yards, and he maybe gets in the end zone, just depending on how the flow of the game is. 42.5 to me is a you have to take it for a team's number one running back.
That's the other part of this that we need to keep in consideration with these numbers. Not just how I feel about it by committee, but game flow matters. Like Pacheco and the Bengals defense, he got a lot of touches and volume because the Bengals defense was, we're begging you to run the ball. We're not letting 15 beat us. The Ravens, and we heard Roquan Smith said it, their big talking point going into that game was, we're going to stop the run, make them one-dimensional. A game plan I would have advised against, but whatever. I don't know how the Falcons are going to handle it. We know how the Bengals have historically handled it. We know how the Ravens tried to handle it. If the Falcons are following the Ravens' game plan, and Isaiah Pacheco couldn't run against that game plan, what makes you think Carson Steele are going to keep pounding the rock with him? The game flow really matters for Sunday as much as anything else.
Do you think that the skepticism towards Carson Steele comes from the fact that he was undrafted?
Yes. I do. Yeah, that I think it's largely because of that.
I feel like if the Chiefs had used a sixth-round pick on Carson Steele, I don't think we'd be having this conversation. But the fact that he was undrafted and they kind of, like, it, I guess, we talked about it yesterday. They've just had so many of these guys, I just don't have the worry about it. I think he can be Spencer Ware. I think he can be Damian Williams in this offense. Damian Williams would get 42 yards in this game. Spencer Ware would get 42 yards in this game. I'm not worried about their ability to run the ball at an average level. Is Carson still going to run for 100 yards this season? Probably not. Can he be a guy that gets you between 50 and 70 somewhat regularly and you just can figure it out elsewhere? Now, I do agree with the text line here, 913-586-7965. I do think they're going to do a little bit more screen game than normal, and I think they're going to try to get Xavier Worthy. Like, if you had to, like, I would guess that Xavier Worthy gets two carries in this game.
That's, yeah, I think Worthy or some wide receiver, some variation of that gets more touches and then we usually see.
So text line says he also fumbled last week. Yeah, it's just that that doesn't really bother me. That's just going to happen over the course of time. It was one thing. It is weird. I kind of feel like there was a lot of hype around Carson Steele, and now it's like, hey, all that preseason hype, show and prove now. It's your job to take. I don't think it's Samaje Perine's job. I'm going to end up being wrong on this, and they're going to end up giving him way more carries. I think Samaje Perine gets maybe four carries, and they throw it to him out of the backfield. I think we are going to start the process of learning over the next month or so if they have something with Carson Steele. And you guys know my stance. If you dominate at a mid-major like he did and dominated at UCLA like you did last year, we are not talking about some small school kid that is getting his shot. He didn't come from Western Michigan. He played last year in the Pac-12 and ran for almost 1,000 yards last season. I don't really get the worry for Carson Steele that other people do. Keep it right here. It's The Drive.
The Drive with Carrington Harrison on your new home for Chiefs football. 96.5, The Fan, brought to you by DM Injury Law. Have you or a loved one been in a car wreck? Contact DM Injury Law today and get the money you deserve. Car wreck? Remember, Mike's got this.
We were just talking about Carson Steele. Right now, the number for him on FanDuel, they have him for over under 11.5 carries. They have his total at 42.5. I feel like that's a little bit low for him. Ask a comparison. Whenever Isaiah Pacheco took over as the starter for Clyde Edwards-Helaire, he took over in week 7. His first game, he ran for over 42 yards. He would have hit the over on this. Now, he didn't in his second game. He also only got 5 carries. I'm not really sure what happened in that Tennessee game, why Isaiah Pacheco started, but only got 5 carries in the game. But, I mean, out of the rest of the games, I mean, he only would have hit the under on this 2 separate times. Now, I'm not saying that that's what Carson Steele is, Isaiah Pacheco, but for me, this is much more of a conversation about usage and if you think the Chiefs are going to use Carson Steele like he is their number one running back, or is it going to be running back by committee? I think we'll have a little clearer picture to that tomorrow to find out if Kareem Hunt is going to be active in the game. You know who I know is not getting any carries in the game? Keontae Ingram. He's not taking a whole lot of carries away. He touches the ball, what, once, maybe twice in this game? The only other person that you would think would have any kind of volume would either be Samaje Perine or Patrick Mahomes just takes off and runs. I actually don't know if that's a game plan that the Chiefs want to have in this one. I saw some people saying this feels like Patrick Mahomes is their leading rusher. If that's the case, I think they're in danger of losing this game. I don't know if you go on the road against a team that I think can put up points like Atlanta can. And I don't know if you do that and Patrick Mahomes, your leading rusher with 43 yards. Carson Steele has 25. I'm not really sure where the rest of the offense then comes from if that's the case. I think it's a negative if Patrick Mahomes is their leading rusher. We know he's not running for 75 yards in this game. If Mahomes is the leading rusher, he runs for like 37 yards. That means you were very, very one-dimensional in this game. And I don't know on the outside if they trust their pieces enough for them to be that one-dimensional on the road.
You said something there that caught my ear. You said Atlanta's too good offensively for that. Are we sure Atlanta's that good offensively? Because I know the touchdown counts, and I'm not saying it doesn't count, but if Saquon Barkley catches that football, they would have also scored 25 points in 2 games. 25 points in 2 games. Real quick math, 25 divided by 2, carry the... That's 12.5 points a game. And even with that late touchdown of Drake London against the Eagles and Nick Sirianni's bad decision-making, they're still only averaging 20 a game. Like, it's not like this is some world-beater offense. I agree with you. I don't think the game plan is going to be Mahomes runs around and leads the team in rushing, but I don't think it's an auto L if Mahomes leads the team in rushing, because I think you have more respect for that Falcons offense than I do. I think that Falcons offense is much more what we saw for 59 minutes against the Eagles than we did for the last minute, which is a 15-ish point a game team.
I think what I like, at least, about Atlanta's offense is, and I'll admit, this is a game that I'm worried about with the Chiefs. You and I had the question thrown out over the course of the summer. If I gave you $1 million and I said you have to accurately predict when the Chiefs' first loss is, I thought Atlanta made a lot of sense to me. They got 2 games on the road against varying degrees of teams. Now, let's see how good the Chargers are. They haven't played a team that you and I think is very good. And you're right. Atlanta could very easily be 0-2 right now, but they're looking at 1-1, and they got to wipe their brow, and whew, they dodged one. But I'm looking at a team that they can do a little bit of everything offensively. So on Monday night, Kirk Cousins was 20 of 29, 241, 2 touchdowns, no interceptions. Bijan Robinson had 14 carries for 97 yards, so they can run the football effectively. Their backup running back had 9 carries for 53 yards. So they got 2 very capable backs. And then you look at their receiver core. Who are you taking away in the pass game? Like, let's say Trent McDuffie completely neutralizes. You pick who that person is. Let's say that Drake London is not a factor in this game. Darnell Mooney's capable of having 50 yards in this game. He had 3 catches for 88 yards. Ray-Ray McCloud, I think, is a really good third, kind of fourth option that could have 40, 50 yards. He had 42 yards. Bijan Robinson is a guy that can catch the ball out of the backfield. Kyle Pitts is very overrated to me, but people still kind of hold Kyle Pitts in regards that maybe he could have 40 or 50 yards. Atlanta has at least 6 different players that you could make a case could have 50 yards receiving in this game. So this game could turn into a shootout. I don't think it's going to be 41-37. That's not really how the NFL is being played right now. But could Atlanta get to 25? If that Bengals team could move the ball down the field and score with their very limited weapons, Atlanta can move the ball against Kansas City.
I'll say this, and maybe I'm going to look dumb on Monday, whatever. I think Atlanta's weaponry is a lot more name than game. Like, Drake London, we've been selling a dream on Drake London. Like, just give him a quarterback. He's good. Just give him a quarterback. We have never seen it.
I actually feel that way about Kyle Pitts and not Drake London.
I think it's both. I think Kyle Pitts is an extreme example of it, but I think it's both. Also, I feel like Bijan's good, and I don't want to discount Bijan. But I feel like because Arthur Smith was a moron who never gave him the ball, we've kind of acted like Bijan Robinson is prime LT. He's good, but I think because we knew his coach was an idiot, we give him extra sauce, extra juice. Darnell Mooney, I think we do the same thing. Hey, he had to play with Mitch Trubisky and pick a player, so he's better than the numbers indicate, but the numbers are the numbers. And Ray McCloud, if I went down to the plaza and pulled 100 Chiefs fans right now,
no one
knows who he is. I think it's a lot more name than game.
I guess what I think makes Atlanta different is we throw titles for players all the time. Oh, this guy's wide receiver 3. This guy's wide receiver 4. You know what Atlanta actually has? They have a real wide receiver number 3. That's Darnell Mooney. Darnell Mooney is the perfect wide receiver 3. He's going to have 500, 600 yards receiving. Ray McCloud. The Chiefs have a lot of those guys on the back half of their roster. They got Juju Smith-Schuster. They got Mecole Hardman. They got Sky Moore. Ray McCloud is the best version of all of those guys. That's like if those guys actually helped and produced. None of those guys have a catch so far this season. Juju doesn't have a catch. Sky Moore doesn't have a catch. Those guys have not contributed offensively to this team. If Atlanta scores 27 points, where's the offense coming from Kansas City? Because one guy that you felt pretty confident could run for 90 yards in that game, he's not going to be there. So if you were telling me that Carson Steele's going to have 35 yards rushing in this game, man, it's going to be a lot of Patrick Mahomes. Hey, you got to go figure it out. It's going to be you, Rashee Rice, Travis Kelce, and you got to make two other weapons in this game if you think they're going on the road and doing this. This is a spot to me for Kansas City. I'm actually more worried about this game than I am about the Chargers. I know they play the Chargers close, but we know the Chiefs always just have that one weird Sunday Night Football on the road against the team that just came off an inspiring win. That feels like you're walking into a little bit of a trap situation. Coming up at the top of the hour, we're going to get you ready for Thursday Night Football. Also talk about the Royals that they have had a week so far. And also keep talking about week 3 as the Chiefs head to Atlanta for Sunday Night Football. Keep it right here. It's The Drive.